Tadayanam namaskritcha nadam cheva narottamam devim saraswatim vyasam tato jayam udirayat. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 9, chapter entitled The Passing Away of Bhishmadev in the Presence of Lord Krishna. Text number 1. Suta uvarcha,
Suta uvarcha,
iti bita praja droha, sarva dharma vivitsaya, tato vinashanam praga, yatra deva brato patat. Iti vita praja droha, sarva dharma vivitsaya, tato vinashanam praga, yatra deva brato patat. Iti vita praja droha, sarva dharma vivitsaya, tato vinashanam praga, yatra deva brato patat.
Sutta
Sutta Uvarcha. Sri Sutta Goswami said. Iti. Thus. And Bhita. Being afraid of. Apraja Drohat. Because of killing the subjects. Sarva. All. Dharma. Acts of religion. Vivitsaya. For understanding. Tata. Thereafter. Vinashanam. The place where the fight was held. Ragat. He went. Yatra. Where? Devabrata. Bhishmadev. Apatat. Lay down for passing away. Translation and Prabhupada by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Sutta Goswami said, being afraid for having killed so many subjects on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Maharaj Yudhishthira went to the scene of the massacre. There, the Bhishmadev was lying on a bed of arrows, about to pass away. Translation responsibly. Sutta Goswami said, being afraid for having killed so many subjects on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Maharaj Yudhishthira went to the scene of the massacre. There Bhishmadev was lying on a bed of arrows, about to pass away. Purport. In this ninth chapter, as it was willed by Lord Sri Krishna, Bhishmadev will impart instructions to King Yudhishthira on the subject of occupational duties. Bhishmadev will also offer his last prayer to the Lord on the verge of passing away from this material world, and thus become liberated from the bondage of further material engagements. Bhishmadev was endowed with the power of leaving his material body at will, and his lying down on the bed of arrows was his own choice. This passing away of the great warrior attracted the attention of all the contemporary elites, and all of them assembled there to show their feelings of love, respect, and affection for the great soul. Om Gyan Timalandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshirun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Swabhadantikam Vancha Kalpata Rubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyevacha Pititanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasadhi Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Ram Rama Hare Hare. This is a very important and famous chapter in the Bhagavata. Also the previous chapter, the prayers of Queen Kunti. It's also very famous, very important. So the passing away of Bhishmadev. So, Yudhishthira has gone to Kurukshetra. So the battle lasted for 18 days. So for the first 10 days, Bhishma was the commander-in-chief of the army. On the 10th day, he fell by the arrows of Arjuna. He could not actually be defeated because his father, his name was Shantanu. And Shantanu did austerities actually in Vrindavan. If you go to Vrindavan, there's a place there where Shantanu does austerities. What's the name of the forest? Just trying to think which forest it's in. It's close to Vrindavan. Might be Madhuban, but I'm not 100% sure. Might be Madhuban. So he does, Shantanu does austerities there at that place to get a son who will become as powerful as Lord Balaram. So this son is as powerful practically as Lord Balaram. That is Bhishma. So he's extremely powerful. So he was born from Shantanu and Ganga Devi. So Ganga Devi left and Shantanu was bringing up Bhishma Devi. I can't remember the whole story actually. I have to read the Mahabharata and refresh my memory. But one time, Bhishma Devi, he goes away from Shantanu for a period of time. And then when Shantanu comes, one time to the Ganga, the Jamuna, and he sees the Jamuna has stopped flowing, which is incredible for the river to have stopped flowing. Because these are big rivers. If you've seen the Jamuna or you've seen the Ganga, they're big rivers, bigger than even what they are now. And he comes and he sees the whole river has stopped flowing. So then he cannot imagine how could this river not be flowing. There's no water. It's just like the bed of the river. So he goes upstream and then he sees there's one boy there with his bow and his arrows, and he's shooting arrows into the river to create a dam across the river to stop the flow of the Ganga. So he creates a dam just made of arrows to stop the flow of the Ganga. And then it is revealed at that time actually it's Shantanu's son, it is Bhishma himself. So he's incredibly powerful. He's the most powerful warrior on the chariot, on the earth. There was no warrior who could defeat him. So when it came time for Bhishma to be defeated, they would fight each day on the battlefield. The warriors of the Kuru army and the Pandu army. So the Pandavas and Kauravas, sometimes at the end of the day, they would go to the opposing army's camp. Because the rule was, when the sun came up at sunset, the battle would begin. And as soon as the sun went down, the battle would finish. Right? So there were the rules of etiquette in the war. That you could not fight before sunrise, you could not fight after sunset. So then, at sunset, everyone went back to their camp. The Pandavas would go to their camp. The Kauravas would go to their camp. Everyone would refresh themselves, take prasad, take bath, right? They would heal their wounds. They had wounds from the battle. They would cleanse themselves. And then Bhishma, because Bhishma is very powerful, he would apply ointment to the wounds of the soldiers, and they would chant mantras, and then the wounds would heal overnight. They'd wake up in the morning and everything was fresh. This is Ayurveda. Not like it is these days. We don't have that potency anymore. But previously, that's how powerful Bhishma was. He could fix everyone's wounds overnight. So then, in the evening time, sometimes the Pandavas would go across to the Kauravas, to the opposing army. During the day, they were trying to kill each other on the battlefield. But then in evening time, if it says in the Vedic culture, even if the enemy comes to your home, you must treat him like Bhagavan. You must treat him like a honored guest. So at the end of the day, when the fighting had finished, sometimes the Pandavas would go across to the Kauravas' camp. So Duryodhana, he came to Bhishma Dave, and he said to Bhishma that you've been fighting for many days and you haven't killed one Pandava. Yudhishthira, Bhima, Arjuna, Nakula and Sahadev, all of them are still alive. So obviously you're not fighting to your full capacity. Because if you were actually fighting to your full capacity, none of them would be alive. You know, you're the most powerful warrior on the earth, in the universe actually. There's no one more powerful. So what is taking place? So you're not fighting to your full capacity. And Bhishma said, no, I'm fighting to my full capacity. He wasn't, but he was saying, yes, I am fighting to my full capacity. So then he said, tomorrow I will kill all of them, all five. So he got silver arrows. And he gave the box, he closed the box, 5 silver arrows. And he said, Duryodhan, he gave it to Duryodhan. He said, tomorrow I'll be fighting on the battlefield. And he said, you follow me in your chariot. Wherever my chariot goes, you follow me. And he said that when I'm ready to kill each one of them, I'll ask you for the arrow, you give me the arrow, and then I'll kill each one of the Pandavas. So Duryodhan was in ecstasy. His hairs were standing on end. Because tomorrow all of the Pandavas would die. So then he left, and he went to his tent to take rest. And then on the way he met Lord Krishna, who had come from the Pandavas camp to the Kauravas camp. And he said, Duryodhan. And he said, Vasudev, you have come. And Kshatriyas is their nature. Whenever someone comes, you give them whatever they want in charity. So he said, you have come. Please, ask for charity. And Krishna says, do you have 5 silver arrows? And Duryodhan, he gave the arrows to Krishna because he could not refuse. So Krishna took the arrows. The next day, Bhishma was fighting very powerfully. And then he said to Duryodhan, where are the arrows? And he said, well, Krishna took them last night. So the arrows are not there anymore. So Krishna saved the Pandavas. This is one of the main teachings of the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna's greatest quality out of all the Lord's qualities is Bhakta Vatsala. Bhakta Vatsala means he will always protect his devotees. The devotee is always protected by Krishna. So Krishna even apparently broke his vow during the battle to protect his devotee. And many times he protected Arjuna on the battlefield. Krishna had vowed that he would not take up a weapon during the whole battle. But Bhishma said to Krishna, more or less, he said that, well, you broke my vow because I said I would kill all the Pandavas tomorrow, so tomorrow I'll break your vow. Because you said, you've stopped me from completing my vow. I said all the Pandavas will be dead tomorrow, they're still alive. And you said you will not fight, so tomorrow I will put so much pressure on Arjuna in the battlefield that you will have to interfere. So the next day, Bhishma was fighting Arjuna so strongly, and Arjuna was actually being defeated, overcome by the arrows of Bhishma, and he was about to kill him, that Krishna jumped off the chariot, picked up a chariot wheel, so technically he didn't break his vow, because he said he would not pick up a weapon, so he picked up a chariot wheel. So he didn't break his vow, but he broke his vow. So then he ran to Bhishma, and he was about to hit Bhishma. And then Bhishma just put down his weapons. And he said, now. He said, kill me. He said, this is the perfection. Now I'm about to be killed by my Lord on the battlefield during the fight. I've had to fight him so... I've actually made him break his vow. So now we're in chivalrous rust. That's what chivalry means. Chivalry means that there's competition. Prabhupada would get into this mood of competition like that. It's the nature of the soul to be competitive, but not to be envious. Like that. He competed with him, and now it even defeated God himself. He said, now kill me. Everything is perfect. The chivalrous rust was being tasted so much by Bhishma Dev and Krishna. And then Arjuna grabbed Krishna and said, no, you said you would not fight. So he was saved. So Bhishma, after he fought on the battlefield for 10 days, and around about the 8th on the 9th day, then the Pandavas, they came to him in the evening. After the day had finished, the fighting had finished, they came to Bhishma in the evening, and they said to Bhishma, they said, we can't defeat you. And he said, we're trying as hard as we can, but we're not going to win this battle as long as you're alive. No, we can't defeat the Kaurava army as long as you're present. So somehow we have to kill you. So Bhishma said, yes, there's only one way to kill me. He said, I'm not defeatable. You can't defeat me. There's no warrior who can defeat me. But he said, Shikhandi. Well, if you put Shikhandi in front of Arjuna, then I will not fight with Shikhandi. Because Shikhandi was born as a woman, but then did austerities in the previous life to kill Bhishma. So therefore Bhishma would not fight with Shikhandi, because he considered Shikhandi to be a woman. Even though Shikhandi transformed is born a woman, but he transformed into a man during his life. So, but Bhishma still, he would not fight, because that was his religious principle. He would always protect women. So he would not fight. So he said, you put Shikhandi in the front, then I cannot fight. With Shikhandi, I'll keep turning away, and then Arjuna can shoot me with the arrows and kill me. Because Shikhandi was, in the previous life, there were three princesses, Amba, Ambika, and Ambalika. And they were to be married to one of the Kaurava princes. What was the name? There were two princes, Vichitravirya and the other one. What was his name? I can't hear anyone. Chitrangana. Is it? Chitrangana. Okay. So there was these two princes. So Bhishma, there was a Swayambhara, and the three girls, the three princesses, were to be married. So all the Kshatriyas had come to do Swayambhara to compete. So Bhishma just rides in on the chariot, right, in front of it, looks at all the Kshatriyas, right, and then just gets the three of them and puts them onto the chariot and rides out. And everyone, no one would even challenge him because he was Bhishma. there's no way to even fight him. He was so powerful. He just looked at them all, you know, with the look that, you know, if you want to challenge now. You know, just like a lion, he just walked in there and just took them and then took out. So he'd taken all three of them to give them, because he'd taken a vow that he would not marry. Kshatriyas never take that vow. Kshatriyas are always grihastas. They always have wives, usually many wives. So Bhishma had taken a vow that he would not marry. Therefore, when he took that vow, the demigods, they said Bhishma. Bhishma, the sound came from the sky. As soon as he took that vow, all the demigods said Bhishma. Bhishma means awesome. They said Bhishma, he is awesome. That he is taking a vow as a Kshatriya, as the most powerful hero on the earth, not to marry, to stay brahmachari. So he took the three princesses, took them onto the chariot, took them back and gave them to the prince. It was one of the two princes, I can't remember which one it was. And then one of the girls, she said, I don't want to marry this prince. My heart is already given to Shalva, I think it was. There was another prince, and she'd already given her heart to that prince. She said, so I don't want to marry him, I want to go back. So then they said, okay, go back. So they sent her back to Shalva. But then when she arrived, then Shalva said, I'm not going to marry you because you've been touched by the hand of Bhishma for a start. You've been taken to the core of his palace, so I'm not going to take you back. No. This was the system. If the woman was touched before marriage, no one would marry her. That was the Vedic culture. Like that. So because she'd been touched and taken to another palace, he would not accept her. So her life was ruined. She couldn't marry there, and now she couldn't go back and marry there. So for a woman, she couldn't get married. Her life was ruined. She was a princess. So she said, Bhishma has ruined my life. So I will do tapasya, I will do austerity, and in my next life I will come as a man and I will kill him. All right? So she did austerity all her life, worshipped Lord Shiva, became very powerful. Then she gave up her life, she was born again, and then transformed into a man by Shiva's blessing. And then she became Shikhandi. She was born to kill Bhishma. So she didn't actually kill Bhishma. She was shooting arrows at him. He was shooting arrows at Bhishma, but the arrows weren't piercing the body. They were just hitting and kind of bouncing off. But Arjuna was behind, and Arjuna was shooting the arrows because he was behind, and Bhishma kept turning away because he wouldn't fight. Shikhandi kept saying, fight me. And Bhishma said no, and just kept turning the chariot away, saying, turn the chariot, move the chariot. And then Arjuna was behind and kept shooting the arrows. So Arjuna shot so many arrows into Bhishma, it said you couldn't put two fingers in between the arrows. Right? That's how many arrows. So he was just full of arrows. And he'd been hit by so many arrows, and eventually he just put down his weapons and he just fell back on the ground. And then he was laying there on the bed of arrows. When Bhishma went down, the entire battle stopped. Everyone just stopped. Everyone just put down their weapons and everyone just came and surrounded Bhishma Dev. The whole fighting stopped and everyone was just crying. And they're looking, the grandfather, the greatest warrior on the planet, was laying there in a bed of arrows. So because he was so powerful as a Kshatriya, he was such a powerful warrior, and not just that, he actually had a benediction. that he could choose the time that he would leave this world. So he could sustain his life within his prana, within his air, which was in his body. Because no one can physically sustain their life under that situation. Even we have one arrow in us. Right? We can't even sustain our life with one arrow. And he had multiple arrows. But he sustained his life through his prana. So he was just laying there. So then the battle continued for another 8 days. He went down on the 10th day and went for another 8 days. And then after the battle had finished, Yudhishthira was the emperor of the earth, which was Krishna's desire. The Duryodhana was removed. Duryodhana, as Prabhupada has mentioned in the previous chapter, in one purport, Duryodhana, Prabhupada said, he was actually a good king. He was a powerful king. He was a very powerful warrior. So the kingdom was actually being run nicely. You know, the Varnashram system was running nicely and things were running properly, but the emphasis was not on Sanatan Dharma. In other words, there was not an emphasis on worshipping Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So whenever that situation arises, that the Supreme Lord is not being worshipped, then Krishna himself comes or sends his representatives to rectify the situation. And that's what happened when Prabhupada came. The Lord himself is not being worshipped, so then Krishna either comes himself or he sends the representative to rectify the situation. And gradually we're seeing now the situation is being rectified. And soon we're going to rectify the situation more. 16th and 17th of June. Is it June? Yeah. 16th and 17th of June, we're going to have a Maha Sankirtan festival. Every devotee has to get involved in this festival to somehow improve the situation in Melbourne. Unfortunately, in Melbourne and all over the world, people are not worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But there should be a big temple in Melbourne, much bigger than this one. When Prabhupada walked in here first time, what did he say? Prabhupada walked in that door. He looked around and said, this temple is not big enough. Right? And all the devotees were like, you know, how can it not be big enough? You know, there was only 20, 30 devotees at that time. How can it not be big enough? Prabhupada said, this temple is not big enough. You know the shrine in Melbourne? You know the shrine? If you look down Swanston Street, just walk into the middle of Swanston Street and look straight down towards St Kilda and you'll see the shrine. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
The shrine. It's in the gardens. Or if you go to South Melbourne, you look straight from South Melbourne. If you go straight from South Melbourne, straight from Melbourne, from Swanston Street, you'll see the Shrine of Remembrance. It's there. There's a big building there, which was built for the memorial for the war, First World War, Second World War. Prabhupada said that should be the temple. Very good location. We'd have to fix it a bit because there's no windows in there. If you go in there, there's no windows. Like that's all dark. It's artificially lit. We'd have to change it all. Probably have to knock it down and build a new one. But Prabhupada said that should be the temple. So we still have some work to do. We're not finished yet. So 16th and 17th, all the warriors. Prabhupada said we've joined the Sankirtan army. We're soldiers. Hands up if you are a soldier. Okay, I will close my eyes and I'll say it one more time. Hands up if you are a soldier. Okay, I'll close my eyes and say it one more time. Hands up if you are a soldier. Okay, 100%? Good. Because whether you think you're a soldier or you don't think you're a soldier, actually you're a soldier. You don't have a choice. You're part of the Sankirtan army. So the Matajis, when I said, are you a soldier? Some of them didn't put up their hand. Because they're thinking, I am not a soldier. Mataji is not a soldier. The Prabhus can be the soldiers and we'll be the Matajis. No. It doesn't work like that. Because one of the Matajis, she was one of the biggest book distributors. Back in Prabhupada's time, the Matajis were sometimes the biggest book distributors in the world at some points in time. And the men did not like that. You know, they didn't like being beaten by a woman like that. It's the natural psychology of a man. They don't like being beaten by women like that. So you have to make sure you defeat all of them. Right? All of you have to defeat them. Because that Prabhupada would increase the competition. You know, the men would come, Prabhupada said, the women are even beating you. Yeah, the women are distributing more books than you. So he would infuse the competition between everyone. So, one time one of the big book distributors, I can't remember what her name was, but she came to Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, you know, because we're book distributors and we have to go out and we do so much service and... Prabhupada, what did he say? I'm just trying to think of the quote. There's one word that Prabhupada uses when he's talking about Sankirtan one time. He said, he said, you have to be aggressive for Krishna. He actually says that. For the Sankirtan, he said, you have to be aggressive for Krishna. When someone walks down the street, you have to grab them, put them on the wall, and say, buy this book. No, it doesn't mean that. But it means you have to be aggressive. Aggressive means you have to be bold for Krishna. Prabhupada said that. You have to be aggressive for Krishna. Like, you have to be powerful for Krishna. So one of the Matajis said, Prabhupada, we go out and we have to be aggressive. Not like aggressive, but aggressive on the street. You have to, you know, be bold and you have to be very powerful. Prabhupada said, yes, like a lion in the chase and a lamb at home. So when you're out in the street, you become a lion. When you're at home, you're a lamb. So Prabhupada expected the women and the men both to go out and distribute books and to be very bold and very powerful. One time, Sachinandan Swami, he was in Russia and he was giving a lecture. They had big programs and they hired the whole football stadium. And 30,000 people came at a Hare Krishna festival in Russia. It might have been Moscow or somewhere. And 30,000 people came because they put posters all over the city. And on the poster, they had Boy George. Because he wrote that song, Bow Down, Mr. Hare Rama, Hare Krishna. So he wrote that song, and it became very popular. It was number one in some countries around the world. So they put big poster up, Hare Krishna Festival, special guest, Boy George. Right? So Boy George was actually there. But he only came on for the last half hour. It was 4 hours, and he only came on for the last half hour. So this is a Hare Krishna trick. So 30,000 people came, a football stadium. Right, 30,000 people came to hear. So Sachinandan Swami, he had to give a lecture to 30,000 people. So what would you say if you had to give a lecture today at 12 o'clock in the MCG to 30,000 people? What would you say? Would you be nervous? I'd be nervous. I would try to do it for Krishna. If I had to do it, then I would try to do it. But I'd be nervous like that. So Sachinandan Swami, he was nervous. So he rang Tamal Krishna Maharaj on the phone. And he said to Tamal Krishna Maharaj, said, Maharaj, tomorrow I have to give a lecture to 30,000 people. What do I say? So Tamal Krishna Maharaj said, whatever you do it like a lion. That's all he said. He said, whatever you do it like a lion. That's all he said. He didn't say this or say that. But you just do your service like a lion. Prabhupada said, like a lion in the chase and then a lamb at home. When you come home, then you're very meek like that. But when you're on the battlefield, when you're on the street, you're aggressive for Krishna. You're a great warrior. Prabhupada said you're a soldier in the Sankirtan army. He is our general, right? And we are the soldiers on the army. So, Maharaj Yudhishthira, he had become the emperor. Duryodhan, as Prabhupada said, Duryodhan was doing a good job, but there was no Krishna bhakti. So then Yudhishthira had to become the emperor so that Krishna bhakti would be the central focus of the government. So then Yudhishthira, he won the battle. He became the emperor of the earth, but he was not satisfied. You know, imagine thinking 640 million people had to die just to make you the king. Right? That's a heavy thing to have in your conscience. You know, it's a heavy thing to have to live with. Even one person had to die so that you would become the king. What does be 640 million? So he could not, in his mind, he could not reconcile it. Why did that have to happen? You know, my whole family is destroyed. 100 cousins dead. You know, Bhishma is going to leave this world. Drona, our guru, is gone. Right? Everyone's gone. Kripa, everyone's gone. And now I'm the king, but what's the use? It's empty. And Krishna himself spoke to Bhishma to try to pacify Yudhisthira. But even Krishna could not pacify him, because Yudhisthira is actually respected by Krishna. When Krishna sees Yudhisthira, he touches his feet, because he's the older cousin. So he needed to hear from someone who was senior. So they went to visit Bhishma. So Bhishma was lying on the bed of arrows. Now, sometimes devotees ask, and the question is asked, why is it that Bhishma was even on the side of Duryodhana? Why was he there? And what caused the battle in the first place? Why did Kurukshetra begin? If you look historically at Mahabharata, what caused it? Yeah, Draupadi was insulted. I'm just trying to think of the chronology, how it all happened. Okay. What actually caused the battle was in the beginning they tried to kill the Pandavas. Duryodhana tried to kill them. So they had a house of luck. House of luck means a flammable house. They built them a house in a foreign city and they said, you go and stay there for a holiday. Go and have a holiday. We built you a nice holiday house. But the whole house was flammable. It had lanolin or sheep's from the sheep's wool, there was a flammable substance. And it was all through the house. As soon as Yudhisthira walked in there, he just looked around and he said, this house is meant to burn. You know, it was all built nicely, so it looked like this, but it was actually what it was made of. It was flammable. So they knew what was happening. They knew it, but they had to act as it. So apparently they died in the fire. If you read the Mahabharata, then apparently they died in the fire. But then they resurfaced. They won Draupadi at the Swayambhara. Everyone tried to win Draupadi. What was the competition to win Draupadi? You had to get an arrow and you had to string a bow, and the bow was so powerful most of the warriors couldn't even string it. There's only a handful that could actually string it. Jarasandha strung it, Shishupal strung it, Duryodhana strung it, Karna strung it. There's only a number of people who actually strung it. So you had to string the bow. If you strung the bow, you had to pick up an arrow. You had to look into like a bowl of water which was moving, so it wasn't clear, and you had to look in there, and then you had to aim the arrow. And you had to shoot it, and there was a wheel, like a wheel on the roof, and the wheel was rotating. So you had to get through the wheel, through the spokes of the wheel, and hit a fish, a metal fish in the eye. Right? So actually, why did Drupad make that the competition? Because there's only one person who could have actually done that. It was Arjuna. So he was actually trying to get Arjuna to come, because there was a rumour that they weren't dead. Even though everyone thought they were dead, there was a rumour they weren't dead. So everyone came to the Swayambhara, and everyone would see all the warriors were sitting there, and Arjuna and Yudhisthira, Bhima, Nakula and Sat, they dressed up as brahmanas. So they were sitting with all the brahmanas, right? So no one knew that they were there. And Krishna and Balaram were sitting there, right? And Krishna and Balaram and all the kshatriyas were sitting there, and Krishna leaned over to Balaram and he said, there's Yudhisthira. He could recognize him straight away, but no one else could recognize. So then all the warriors, they came and they tried to shoot, and a few of them had a shot, and they just kept missing the eye. And then Karna came. Right? Karna was as powerful as Arjuna. So Karna came, and he picked it up, and he aimed, and he was just about to shoot, and actually Karna would have hit the eye. And Draupadi said, just before he shot, he said, even if you hit it, I won't marry you. He said, because you are the son of a chariot driver. Right? He wasn't actually, he's the son of the sun god. but he was brought up by a chariot driver. So he, at that moment when he was just about to shoot, and he became angry, and then he just missed it. Said by a mustard seed, just missed it. Like that. And then Arjuna got up, dressed as a Brahmana, walked out, picked up the, circumambulated the bow, offered his obeisances to the bow, picked up the bow, strung it, looked at the water, and just hit it in the eye. Right? And everyone was just shocked. You know, a Brahmana just walked in and just... Everyone was just shocked. Everyone was just like looking around. What's going on? You know? And Draupadi, she'd just see by looking at him, you know, he was a god. He was the son of Indra. He was a god. He was more powerful than Indra. And she could see he was a god. She just went up, put the garland around him. He walked out, just walked straight out of the arena. She just walked out with him. Then Bhima and Yudhishthira, they just all walked out dressed as Brahmanas. And all the Kshatriyas went mad. They went mad. They picked up their weapons. They said, we're not going to allow this to happen. They all charged out. So they were walking down the road. The Pandavas were walking down the road. And then all the Kshatriyas came behind them. So Bhima, he went over to a tree, and a huge tree, and he just grabbed the tree. Right, broke the tree, got the whole trunk, and then just cut all the branches off with his hand, and he picked it up like a club. Right? And he looked at all the Kshatriyas, right, with his club, his tree. Right? And then they all came and he just started smashing everyone. Right? And Arjuna was still carrying the bow, so Arjuna had arrows and he just started fighting, and then him and Karna had a duel. And Karna was fighting him and he thought, there's only one person who could do this. This is Arjuna. So they defeated all the Kshatriyas and then they walked off and they took... So then the next day, or that night, they were all sleeping. And then Drishtadyumna, he came with spies, and they were outside the hut where the Pandavas were staying, and Draupadi was with them. And they were listening to them speaking at night before they were all laying down, before they took rest, and they were all talking, and they were talking about chariots and weapons and war, like that. So he knew they were Kshatriyas. So he went back to Drupad, because Drupad said, where's my daughter? You know, she's just left, and you know, we don't even know who she's with, what they are. And he went back and he said, it's the Pandavas. It's them. So the next morning they went, they picked them up in chariots, they took them back, and they sat on the throne, and they became, everyone knew the Pandavas are back. So then they went back to Hastinapur to see Duryodhana, and Duryodhana was very upset, because up until then he thought they were all dead. He thought he killed them. Suddenly they're back, and he's acting very happy. Oh, so nice that you're back. I'm so glad you're back. He was infuriated. So they came back, and then they said, now that we're back, because actually Yudhishthira was the king. It wasn't Duryodhana, it was Yudhishthira was the king. So actually the kingdom was his. So Yudhishthira was such a gentleman. He came back, and he said, just give me half. You're my cousin. You have half of India. I'll have the other half. So Duryodhana said, no, okay, no problem. You can have that half, where the desert is, right, which is Rajasthan. If you go out towards Rajasthan, it's all desert like that. He said, you can have that half, no problem. So they drove out there, Krishna and Yudhishthira and the Pandavas, they drove out on the chariot. And when they got there in the desert, Krishna looked up in the sky, and then he gave an indication to Indra. Indra began to rain, and then right in front of their eyes, a forest grew. Right? And suddenly palaces grew. Built by, I think overnight they went to rest, and they woke up in the morning. Vishwakarma built palaces. Indraprastha. Even more opulent than Hastinapur. So then they invited everyone, come and see our new home. You know, you get a new home, you invite all your relatives, come and see the new home. So they all drove up there, and when they got there, they couldn't believe it. You know, they're living in the desert, they've got this opulent city. And then they walked in, Duryodhana walked in to the into the palace, and the way Vishwakarma had made, as you walk in the entrance hall of the main palace, there was water and land on the same level. So water and land just went like that. And it said that if someone envious of the Pandavas came in to the into the palace, they would see the water as land and the land as water. So Duryodhana walked in because he was envious. He walked in and just fell into the water. And Draupadi and Bhima, they just laughed. Draupadi was laughing, she's clapping her hands, saying, oh, look, such a, you know, the king of the earth has come, and look, you know, he's in my... And Duryodhana was very attached to Draupadi because she was so beautiful. Right? He wanted to marry her, but he didn't get her during the Yajna. So then when she laughed at him, he could not tolerate that. And Bhima was laughing because they were enemies, Bhima and Garuda. So Bhima was laughing. He said, "Oh, Maharaj, you've come." You know, he's like wet. You know, he said, "Oh, Maharaj, so good to see you. Like that, you've come into our palace like that. Welcome." Like that. So because they laughed, he just left. And then Yudhishthira, he said to them, he said, "You should not have laughed." He said, "You don't know what you've done." And that basically started the whole battle. The whole thing was from there, from that moment. So then, does everyone have about 5 more hours? Because once you get to the Mahabharata, that's it. It's like, I'll tell a few more minutes like that. So then Bhishma, when Draupadi was being disrobed, because he was living with Duryodhana and he was eating the food which is being offered to him by Duryodhana, he became contaminated in consciousness. So Prabhupada points out that even very advanced devotees, if you eat food cooked by non-devotees, your consciousness will become contaminated. Prabhupada said your mind will become wicked. So even when she was being disrobed in front of all of the Kauravas, Duryodhana was saying, "Disrobe her." And Dushyant was pulling her sari. This is intolerable. Right? If that was happening to any of the women, right, then immediately we would stop that. I remember I was on a Harinam many years ago, and we're in a line in Swanson Street, we're in a line, all the men were there and all the Mataji's were there, and we're all chanting. And I looked over and there's this one drunk man, and he was in front of the Mataji's, and he was trying to put a cigarette in one of the Mataji's mouth. He was like standing there like this, trying to put a cigarette in her mouth. You know, very inappropriate. So Gyana Samudra Prabhu was next to me, and we were chanting, and then I saw him doing that, so I just went like that to Gyana. I said, "Hey, you know, do something about that." So then I just looked back, and then I saw all the crowd, they were all looking at us, they all went like that, and then I looked back, and Gyana had him on the ground, and the guy had a bottle of wine, well, he's a drunk, so Gyana had him on the ground with a bottle of wine, and he was pouring it on his head, like that. So that was a little too much. Yeah, that was, don't do that like that. But just, push them away or something. But don't go there. That's Gyana Prabhu. He's very passionate. So anyway, the guy got what he deserved, and the crowd actually kind of liked it. They're all going, "Yeah." But it's not something we should do like that. So Draupadi was being disrobed, and Bhishma, because he was the grandfather, he should have said, "Stop it." If the grandfather sees the grandchildren doing it, he says, "Hey, stop." Stop. But he didn't do anything because he was contaminated. So his consciousness became cloudy. He didn't stop. So then, up until the battle took place, until he fell on the ground, and the arrows pierced his body, and all his blood drained out of his body. So when all the blood came out of his body, he became purified. Because he was contaminated from having the food from Duryodhana within his system. When all the blood left, then his consciousness was completely pure once again. And that's now Yudhishthira comes to him. And now Yudhishthira will hear Dharma from the mouth of Bhishma in pure consciousness. So Bhishma is one of the 12 Mahajans. So his instructions here are extremely important. He will teach us what is perfect Dharma. So this chapter is extremely important. And he has the benediction. He can die whenever he wants. So he says to Krishna, because Krishna comes at the last moment, he says to Krishna, "I want to die with you, with your foot on my chest, and just looking at your face." So Krishna gives him that benediction. After he instructs Yudhishthira, Krishna puts his foot on his chest, and he looks at Krishna, and then he leaves this world. And then Haridas Thakur also had the same benediction. That Lord Chaitanya did the same thing, put his foot on his chest. Haridas Thakur looked at him and then left this world. Prabhupada also had a similar benediction. He could leave the body when he chose to leave. Because Prabhupada left on November the 14th. In September or October, the devotees came to Prabhupada. They said, "Prabhupada, we don't want you to leave." And then Prabhupada, he closed his eyes for about 3 or 4 minutes, and then he opened his eyes and he said, "Krishna has given me the choice. I can go when I want to go." Like that. So then Prabhupada stayed as long as he could to inspire us. Like that. Okay, so we'll stop here. We'll see if there's any questions or comments on what we have discussed.
One comment and one question. Comment is about when Duryodhan had insulted Draupadi, also said, blind man's blind son. That's what has come.
Blind man, blind son.
Dhritarashtra's blind son was blind. He was really blind. That's when all about this.
Insulted him.
More question. What happened to those five arrows? Do we know something about those five arrows which were supposed to be?
I'm not sure where they are. There's a museum, if you go to Kurukshetra, which is about, how far is it? 150 kilometers above Delhi? Something like that. If you go to Kurukshetra, above Delhi, they still have a museum there about the battle. And if you go around the museum, I've never been there, but if you go around the museum, it tells you each day of the battle, the 18 days, which formation the army used. You know, one day they used the chakra formation, the next day they used the stork crane or stork formation. They use different, so it tells you all about it. That's maybe it says something about where the arrows are or something.
Now the government of India has been very big museum in the same place. Krishna, Diki, and Arjuna.
Now ISKCON has a temple there. Any other question? Come.
It's not related to this lecture, it's related to yesterday, but may I ask a news? The demigods, they are pious and they still have the desire to enjoy and to control. But aren't those tendencies also kind of what? Isn't that kind of a little bit demoniac as well, trying to enjoy and control? So,
yeah, because everyone in the material world has come here to enjoy separately from Krishna. Ishwaraham, Nahambogi, Siddhoham, Balavan, Sukhi. Each one of us wants to be a controller and an enjoyer. So the demigods, when you leave the spiritual world, Prabhupada says, I think in the 8th canto, or like that, he says that when you first take birth in the material world, you take birth as Lord Brahma, or a very highly placed Prajapati, or Devata, like that. So you're a devotee when you first leave the spiritual world, because you're a devotee in the spiritual world, but you become a little bit envious of Krishna. It means you want to be a separate controller, a separate enjoyer. So you come into the material world, you're still a devotee. Your Lord Brahma is a devotee, and the demigods are devotees. But you want to have your own space. So everyone in the material world still has the disease. So all the demigods are devotees. They all wear tilak. They get up every morning. Just like, when does Chaturmas begin? Pretty soon. So they're just about to take rest. Right? In there, because their time is different to our time. So during Chaturmasya, that's when they take rest. For 4 months, that's when they're asleep. So in heavenly planes, it's night time. They're just about to take rest. So 1 year on earth is 1 day and night in Swarga. So the demigods, they are devotees. You know, they get up in the morning, they do yajnas. You know, they do all these activities for the pleasure of Krishna. But still, they have some desire to enjoy separate from Krishna. Yeah. So the nature of being Ishwara and being Bhogi, that is also there in the pure soul. We are also, even as pure devotees, have a desire to control and a desire to enjoy, but it's only for Krishna's pleasure. Just like controlling means you have to organize things. So in the spiritual world, all the devotees are organizing things. Before Radha and Krishna arrive, we're at their meeting place, where they're going to arrive and have their pastimes, all the devotees are there before they get there. Brinda Devi's already there, and she's saying, okay, do this, do this, do this. So everyone, it's all organized. It's very well organized. Yeah, it's not like sometimes in ISKCON, it's not so well organized. You know, we have to improve our standards. That's what we're doing, we're trying to improve. So when we get to the spiritual, it's very well organized. So that desire to control, that's there, that's on behalf of Krishna. One time, one of the devotees came to Prabhupada and said to Prabhupada, they're talking about one of Prabhupada's disciples. And they said, Prabhupada, he just wants to control everything. And Prabhupada said, yes, but only for Krishna. So the desire to control is there in the pure soul. And the desire to enjoy is there in the pure soul. But in the pure state of consciousness, we can only enjoy prasad. In other words, it has to be offered to Krishna first. Right? Hands up if you enjoy prasad. No, now you're enthusiastic. When we ask you to go in Sankirtan, you're like, but now prasad, then you're enthusiastic. So everyone wants to enjoy. Why do we like enjoying? Why do we like prasad? Because it is the nature of the soul. Because Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. And we are created in his image. So we also have that propensity or proclivity to enjoy. We like to enjoy. Oh, I mean, I like to enjoy all the time. Like that. So we like to enjoy, but it has to be prasad. It has to be offered to Krishna first. It's for Krishna's pleasure. And then if Krishna leaves us something, okay, we'll enjoy it. And it seems like he usually leaves something. I've never seen him not leave anything. In our tradition, there are stories where sometimes the deity eats everything. There's nothing left. It happens sometimes. I haven't seen it happen here. Because maybe we're not pure enough to have that kind of exchange with the Lord. So it seems like he leaves it. We always get prasad. Like that. But the mentality should not be that the prasad is for us. Prabhupada says this in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that before the offering is made, you should not think even once, oh, this will be good. I hope Krishna enjoys it. Because then I will really enjoy it. You should not think like that. That contaminates the offering. Krishna still accepts it, but it's not as relishable for him. Just like on Janmashtami, my service for many years is that I make all the plates up for the deities and then I help to dismantle them. So when I was a young devotee, then I used to make my stashes. Yeah, after it's all been offered, then I stash all the really good stuff. Right? For the next day, for Prabhupada's Vyasa. And then, after the feast, then I bring out all the stashes and then we'd all sit there and we'd just, like that. But then after a few years, now I don't do it anymore. Because it's not as relishable. Because then, I would try not to think of it before Krishna ate it, but then afterwards, then I'm thinking, so then somehow there's something about me there. So then what I do now, I don't take any stashes. And I just think, well, at the end of the day, if there's anything left, then okay, we'll take something. If there's anything left. Usually there's not, because they sell all the prasad now. Like that. So, we have to develop that consciousness that it's all for Krishna. And just give it to him with love. Everything's for you. And then he always leaves something anyway. So we get everything anyway. But what's our consciousness? If we're thinking before it's offered, that will be nice. Or, devotees used to make pizza for the 7 o'clock offering. I think they still do it sometimes. But they used to make pizza. And it used to be like a shark frenzy, after the 7 o'clock offering. They go into the kitchen at 6:55, the plate's only hardly even off. You're supposed to wash Krishna's plate and do it, and they're all there, and they're just, it's like a frenzy, and they're all grabbing pizza, and it's like, what's the consciousness? Is it for Krishna or is it for us? So we have to learn to do everything for Krishna, and then we accept the remnants. Just like one time, Prabhupada was in Los Angeles, and the devotees were cooking Prabhupada's lunch. So what did Prabhupada have for lunch? He had that four-tier cooker. If you go to Vrindavan, to Prabhupada's rooms, you'll see his cooker. So Prabhupada had rice, dal, 2 sabjis, and then make chapatis. That's Prabhupada's lunch. So one day, they were cooking for Prabhupada in Los Angeles, and they were making like 12, 13 preparations. So many nice things, because it's for the guru. So they're making so many nice things. Then Prabhupada walked past the kitchen, and he looked in. And Prabhupada said, "What are you doing?" And they said, "Prabhupada, we're cooking your lunch." And Prabhupada said, "Are you cooking for you or are you cooking for me? Because if you're cooking for me, that's not what I eat." No? So that means that's pure devotion. Pure devotion means we do it for Krishna, what Krishna wants. We do it for Prabhupada, what he wants, what the guru wants. What we want doesn't matter. My spiritual master said that to me one time. I was trying to think where he said it. I think it was up there. I think it was up in just upstairs. I can't remember exactly where it was. But he said to me one time, he said, "Why do you want to do this?" Something like that. And I said, "Oh, because of these reasons." You know, I had good reasons like that. But he just looked at me and goes, "Who cares what you want? Just who cares what you want? Who cares?" You know, I was like, I wanted to do some service for Krishna, and I had good reasons why I wanted to do it. But it's not what he wanted. He said, "Who cares what you want? Who cares?" And sometimes I say this to myself, "Who cares what I want? No one cares anyway. None of you care what I want." So it doesn't really matter. The only person who's really interested in us is us. Right? The only person who really cares about us is us. You know, "Oh, I've got to get this pizza." You know, and it's like, you know, it's not the right consciousness. The consciousness of Krishna consciousness is everything is for Krishna. Idam Krishnaya, idam na mama. When we do the jagya, right? Idam Krishnaya, this is for Krishna. Idam na mama, this is not for me. Right? That's what you should be like when you offer the prasad to Krishna. Idam Krishnaya, this is for you. Idam na mama, it is not for me. And if you can't get that in your consciousness, at least do it one day a year. What is that day called? Janmashtami. At least one day, get it together. At least one day of the year, just give everything to Krishna. Right? Janmashtami. Right? Everyone's here on Janmashtami. Right? You can't even get in the temple Janmashtami. Mangalati Janmashtami. You know it's Janmashtami because you can't get into the temple. Right? Everyone's here. Janmashtami is different to every other day. There's no day like Janmashtami. So what I do every year, I try to improve my offering to Krishna. Krishna, I'll try to do more for you this year. Right? Because in my mind, I'm always thinking about me. Right? So this year, I just want to do it all for you. I'll offer you the best I can offer you. It's not very good. Right? And it's so full of faults that let me just try to do the best. Like that. So we should try to come to pure devotional service. Any other questions or comments? Yeah, so in the temple we have two types of prasad. One's called Krishna prasad, the other one's called devotee prasad. So devotee prasad means what's cooked for us at breakfast, which they're just beginning to learn how to make that healthy as well. For most of the 20 years I've been in this temple, the devotee prasad hasn't been that healthy either. Like that. So now we're just starting to, you know, it's improving now. The khichdis are quite good now. Like that. And they need to have, because devotees can't eat what Krishna eats. If you eat what Krishna eats, you will, your consciousness will transform very quickly. You know, it's like in the morning when we come to Mangalati and the curtain opens, what's Krishna doing? When you see him at Mangalati, when the doors open, right, what's he doing?
Smiling.
Why is he smiling? How many milk sweets did he just eat? Right? What does he get? Does he get five? Yeah, he just ate five different types of milk sweets. I'd be smiling too. That's a great way to start the day. Right? Sweet rice, rasgulla, burfi, sandesh, and rasmalai. Yeah, I'd be pretty happy. If you open the door, you'd see me, I'd be pretty happy as well. But there's a good chance that, you know, and then, you know, he eats the fruit offering about 3 hours later, and then he eats breakfast about an hour and a half after that. Yeah. And then he has Raj Bhog about 3 hours after that, and about 3 hours later he has another fruit offering, and then a bit after that he has savouries and sweets, and just before he goes to bed, right, then he has laddu, sabjis, hot milk, and puris, like that. So you just try to follow that program. Yeah. And you'll feel, the first day you'll feel pretty good. Right? The second day, according to your age, you'll have different effects on your and you won't be able to maintain it like that. So that's why we have different types of, because you see what Prabhupada ate. What did Prabhupada eat? Prabhupada ate out of a 4-tier cooker. Morning Prabhupada just have some fruit generally, and sometimes puff rice when he's in India. And then lunch, two subjects, rice, dal, chapatis. Right? Prabhupada wasn't eating what Krishna ate. Right? And then in the evening, he would have milk, and sometimes he would have a little bit of prasad in the evening. Like that. That's what Prabhupada ate. So devotee eats one way, Krishna eats one way. Like that. So you can have a little bit of Krishna's Mahaprasad. You should honor some of the Mahaprasad. These days I usually honor the Tulsi leaves. Like that. Just take the Tulsi leaves. And... good. Because what Krishna eats, I can't eat. I did it for 8 years when I was a brahmachari. Every day I just have Mahaprasad. Like that. But not just Mahaprasad, other things. But I'd eat a lot of Mahaprasad. But these days I just can't do it. The days are gone. It's all downhill from here. Second half of life is quite different. Any other question, comment? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki.